Hey there. Welcome to the Speak and Flow podcast. I am so glad you're here. This show is for leaders who care. Leaders who know that when things get messy, the way we communicate makes all the difference. Every week I sit down with incredible guests, founders, VPs, rising stars, to unpack real moments of today where communication matters. We talk about what works, what doesn't, and how you can lead conversations that create trust, movement, and momentum. Because in uncertain times like today, your words have weight. Let's use them well. Let's dive in. Welcome to the Speak and Flow podcast. I am so excited to dive in today because it's about a hot topic. We are all talking about AI, but are people using it to the fullest extent? And joining me today is a deep dive conversation about how we need to have a compelling vision when we're using AI. And we have an expert who is the director of the Institute of Business Innovation at UC Berkeley. He describes himself as an academic entrepreneur who is on the mission to help people, whether you are in academics or whether you're in business or even personally, how to adopt that entrepreneurial mindset, which is so important across all aspects of our lives. His name is Uzan Aygören. Thank you, Uzan, for joining us.
Thank you, Melinda. It's a pleasure to be here. Second time around.
I really enjoy your insights and I always learn from you. So I'm excited to dive in today. And so I'll start off with the first question. There's a busy leader out there who has stopped to listen to this episode. What do you hope can change in the way this person leads or communicates after, if they're taking everything into consideration?
Yes, yeah, thank you so much. I mean, so the topic is AI, and of course the vision, and vision is not bound to AI. I mean, it has always been like the driving force for people, because it's like, I mean, think about it throughout history, like, you know what, there were prophets. So prophets are the people who attracts and combines all those followers, and then they started all those religions, and then it spreaded out, emerged somewhere else. So, I mean, the leaders need to think of themselves like those prophets. I mean, who are the ones? They are the ones who have those great ideas, which are inspiring, which are exciting, but at the same time, controversial and scaring. So, like, I would like to say, I mean, the leaders who have this huge vision, if they would like to become this magnetic field for all those followers and their employees in the company, to be courageous about what they would like to build. Not only building on their existing success, not only building on 10%, 20% success, but aiming to grow at 10x. 20x success. I think that's a compelling vision.
I know that's a compelling vision, and that is what we are all have access to, especially in the AI world, even more so than before.
That's true. And actually, one more thing about it. It's like, I mean, the human mind is trained to think like increments, like climbing a ladder.
Yes.
But in real life, especially through AI, I mean, what we can't comprehend as human being is the exponential growth.
I mean,
no matter how we think, we cannot comprehend it. It's like magic. I mean, this is how the startups grow, is like in exponential, and we cannot think that. But even if we cannot think it, if we know it and if we apply it systematically, I think that's the path to grow ourselves and our organizations.
I mean, as a and you are so correct. And as a director of at the Institute of Business Innovation at UC Berkeley, you have a lot of experience with innovation and thinking big. And so, tell us more about what you do and also what excites you.
Okay, yeah, thank you. And so daily, I mean, as you mentioned, what I do is, I mean, I interact a lot with the corporate leaders and also startups and also ongoing research on campus and also the investors. So, like, I mean, a broad spectrum of the innovators all around the place. So corporates are the ones, I mean, who have the funding but needs direction. I mean, once they have the vision, okay, they have the direction and everything gets aligned on that, but it's not easy. So we'll talk about it more. So I'll leave it for now. On the other part, there are startups and researchers who work on the next frontiers of technology and innovation. And the challenge is the corporates, okay, would like to move faster, would like to grow, but it's not easy to innovate or bring all this frontier technology within the company. So they have to look for this outside research and the outside startups to bring that technology back into their organizations. So that's their challenge. So I find this mutually exciting for both parties, both for the company when they reach this research and the startup, so they would like to get it, and also for the startups and the researchers, it's like, okay, now they have this opportunity to show the impact of their work in the real world. So from my perspective, so what excites me is like every day learning about these new challenges and innovations. So that's a great learning opportunity in all terms. So I like learning. I like being at the epicenter of this learning organization. And it helps you grow exponentially, learning different sectors, different verticals every day. Otherwise, I mean, you cannot expose yourself to all those different innovations. So I think that's, I mean, one part is about being around innovation, and second part is being around great organizations and great founders. And interacting with all those parties, so it's a great opportunity to learn all from those.
I love it. I think that's so fascinating. It sounds like, and then plus you're there in the forefront of how are these innovations solving real problems for these organizations?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, otherwise, I mean, in academia, I mean, you can just build in the lab, so you don't know if you'll have a real world impact. But when you connect it with the real world challenges, boom, now you can see the results of what you've been working. So I think that's really exciting. And also one other thing is, I mean, when I tell this about it, it's good, but not many organizations and not many corporates can work like that, because I mean, people do not know what they do not know. I mean, in order to imagine something, in order to work with something, first you need to expose yourself. You need to know about it. But I see, I mean, only a handful of companies or organizations are doing that.
Oh,
Not
really?
many organizations are open to that. I mean, maybe as intention, they are willing to learn and attract, but it's not easy for the corporates and organizations if the direction is not aligned or if the task is not well defined. Because for corporates, the task is mostly about execution, and execution requires returns and short-term targets. But the job I'm describing is more about exploration. In exploration, you don't know the destination. You don't know what it will come out. That's why it's scary, but at the same time, it's exciting. So, for the corporates, I mean, who have not gone to this road, what I would like to say is leaving some room for exploration.
Right. And there's probably so much complexity with these companies, and so it becomes a little more challenging to adapt or to explore because it's so complex, but you're inviting and encouraging and suggesting that it's important to do this exploration. And is this, you talk about imagination gap. Is this what you're talking about?
Yes, definitely. So I'd like to connect it there. So like, when I say imagination gaps, okay, so I already said that. If you people cannot imagine things what they do not know or what they have not. You can only imagine the things that you are already exposed, or at least your subconsciously. I mean, consciously or subconsciously, but at least you need to have some something in your mind that's related to what you would like to build. So that's why, it starts with the exposure, and then with the exposure, inspiration, and then after inspiration, the exposition and exploration, and finally expression. So like, you need to follow those stages. So when I say for the exploration. And with the imagination, yeah, what I mean is, like, before AI, or before all this technology revolution, all this disruption in the last in the 21st century, like, think about it. In the Industrial Revolution, people were imagining things. For example, going to the moon, moonshot thinking. Like, okay, we will put a man on the moon, said John F. Kennedy. And all the combination of the compute power in the world was less than a calculator. Okay. But still, the technology, they didn't know if the technology was capable of that. Still, human mind put a vision to go on the moon, and then they worked really hard for a couple of years to close this technology gap. In those years, we had a technology gap, the capability gap. Now, what I'm saying is, it's vice versa now. Now we have a technology which is so advanced, and we don't even know what to do with that, and we don't know the capabilities of that. It's, even the founders of the technology, even the founders of AI, they have no, they have ideas, of course, but nobody knows the limits of AI so far. There is so much room in imagination, but we are still bound to the imagination, to what we are used to. So what I'm saying is, what if we can improve our vision 10 times, 100 times, 1,000 times, a million times? Put a vision like going to the moon. That's why I find Elon Musk so inspiring, because he said, "Okay, I'll go to Mars." That's a compelling vision. He doesn't know how to do that, but still working on that. So what if every organization, every leader, every person on Earth puts a mission like that, 10 times, 100 times, million times? Scary, but also exciting, and tries to do that. Okay, with the technology available, can we manage to build that? So that's how we can overcome this imagination gap.
That's worth living for.
Yes, that would be a very exciting life, right?
It will be a very exciting life. Busy and exciting and fulfilling as long as it's something that you desire, but it's almost if we can't see it, like you said, if whether conscious or subconscious, how do we know? How do we see it? How do we have this vision
Yeah.
that's outside of our conscious and subconscious?
Yeah. Yeah. That's why it's so important to be on the search for outside. If you always do the same work every day, if you're always stuck at the routine, we're never able to see that. But going out of the building, getting to know people, even in your organization, talking to people, I'm pretty sure that, if you talk to people in your organization, you will learn a lot as well, instead of talking to the same people every day. So that's also one way. And also, yeah, talking to all these founders, also putting this inspiring vision, and then trying to see who else has a similar vision, what they have built so far. And then you can say, oh my God, if they have done this, I can do this as well.
Or like you bounce ideas off of so that you both are on, going in the same direction or learning from each other, the best practices.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So
And
I'm
so how do I know if I'm on the right track?
okay. Right. How do you know you're on the right track?
If it's a strong vision, it's something that it's worth achieving and going for, how do I know?
I think, I mean, yeah, okay, if you define, I mean, being on the right track, I think you will feel it. I think, by the way, I mean, you have some progress around it, so I think you'll see some quick wins. You'll feel lucky about it. So what I mean is, like, I mean, once you know, I mean, the human brain works is like this selective attention and focus. So when you have this vision, I mean, if you start to selectively attend something, attract something, oh my God, that's exactly what I'm thinking for. I mean, I think these are some signs that you're on the
Right
right
track.
path, or like miraculously you meet someone and you read something and then, oh my God, that fits my thinking. I think these are the signs that life gives us. And then what I see in Silicon Valley is, I mean, I think Silicon Valley is the embodiment of this delusional thinking put into real life, which does not exist in this level, maybe at different levels. But what I see here is, like, when it, I mean, even from my students or from the people that I know or from the stories that I hear, when you have this delusional vision, it's delusional for anyone else. But when you talk about it and when you believe it so much, when you live it, when you embody it, people believe in you as well. That's what I see. And then they become willing to put money into you, willing to put money into what you are believing and you are living. I think, I mean, that would be a great sign that you're on the
Right
right
track,
track.
correct. Yeah, you're in flow. You're in flow
Yes, you're in
because
flow.
su
Yes.
suddenly, yep, your mind, body, spirit is in alignment, and then you start to things start flowing into place, like things happen, you meet the right person, you get the right opportunity, and it seems like it's good luck, but actually I believe that it's you're in alignment with
Yes.
the vision, and then so how can we, to have a compelling vision, it's big, it's bold, it's scary. How does one communicate it in a way that so people can execute it?
Yes. I think that's a great question, and many other people are scared about this. So I'll give you one example of a person who I know and who inspired me a lot. I think it was about more than 10 years ago, in Barcelona. I met a person. It was in the World Open Innovation Conference, and we were both jury members at an event. And I said, "Okay, yeah, I mean, last mate. So who are you?" He described himself as a food artist. Okay, so what does a food artist do? So what do you mean? And then he said, okay, there are three things what I do. And one of the things he described to me was, like, okay, I work on ungravitational food. So what does it mean? What is ungravitational food? It's like, okay, I just dream about it. Instead of going to the food, dropping our fork and knife, what if the food flies to our mouth?
Wow, that
Okay.
is
Okay, that's crazy. That's delusional. But how do you make it? And then, okay, so if you would like to see how I make it happen, so come to my workshop. So I went to his workshop the other day, and there were a couple of people. There were some scientists, there were some practitioners, and, like, so what I came to observe was, I mean, he had this vision. Okay, that's crazy. But then he researched the literature about people who are working on the same problem. Of course, other people were not defining in the way he defines it. But I mean, there was a scientist who was working on, like, the magnetic attraction between food and the utensils that we use. Okay, so that was one way to approach it. There was someone else who work on a different aspect about what about the ingredients and combining it with different gas, whatever. So they were, so like, I mean, he was looking, I mean, he had this artistic dream, delusional dream, but at the same time, he had this scientific base. So he has, he calls it as an artist, but he followed the science. So he said, okay, what is available? So what is real at the moment? So what is the edge of the science at the moment? And then a couple of years later, I mean, I met him again. He came to Berkeley, and then you know what? He made it. A couple of years later, I mean, he put this vision into action. I mean, he tried several things through the science, but at the end, he was able to bring this flying food into life. He invented the first flying food.
Wow,
So how does he
that
do
is
that?
awesome.
I mean, how does he do that? So he just, I mean, at the end, I mean, after several iterations, experimentation, navigating around uncertainty, so he found a way to make it happen. Okay, it wasn't the same idea he described me 10 years ago. Of course, it iterated, but at the end, he found it. So what he does is like now he calls it eatable cloud at the moment. So he produces some clouds. So the cloud flies because there is some helium inside. But then you can put some ingredients that you want. I mean, if you like a coffee, he puts coffee inside. So you can catch the cloud and then eat the coffee, or
Oh my
I don't know, whatever
gosh,
you want. I mean, he
wow.
can put whatever nutrients and ingredients you want. And now he's a very successful entrepreneur, working with a lot of restaurants and bars, nightclubs. So
Oh, that's so
that's a
cool.
crazy, yeah, that's a crazy, crazy example. But again, you know what? When I talk about this story to CEOs, many CEOs are like, "Oh my God, that's crazy! Don't talk about this idea."
Okay. Well, I mean, I'm curious though, how would a CEO who is running a company with, like, let's just say 500, 600 people, the CEO has a crazy idea but wants to execute it, but how do you have the communication skills to bring everybody else along on this crazy idea? How does, yeah.
I think there are two things to this question. First, I mean, who is the CEO? So what traits does the CEO have in order to have this vision? I think, I mean, when we look at the real life, so I mean, which companies are the world's largest companies? Like, okay, yeah, Nvidia, Google, Microsoft, SpaceX. I mean, we know all those leaders. I mean, they are the ones who have this trillions dollars of worth of companies, and at the same time, they are the founders. So, a startup. So they are still operating at the startup mode. They still have the startup orientation. Okay. So this is something I'm researching and working on, and writing a book on this subject. I call it startup orientation. And when we look at the other organizations, other CEOs, I mean, if they are not the founders, it's really hard to embody this founder mode, the startup mode. Maybe that's one reason they don't have this crazy vision. And their visions are more like realistic, more grounded. But when it's more grounded, it becomes more like a target, not as a vision. It's not as crazy. So I think the first level is increase. So coming over this imagination gap and increasing the extent and craziness level of your vision, becoming more like a founder, more like a startup. I think that's the first step. So your question is, I think, for the second step. You say, okay, once you have this vision, how can you make your organization follow you and make it work? I think that's for the second level. So for that part, I think there are a couple of ways to do that. And I think still we can learn it from the founders and the crazy startups. So we can learn from them. So first, I mean, this is also something you mention a lot, is the communication. And then how do you communicate that? So it is, I think, about always keeping it as the most important thing. that you are trying to solve. In that way, you can attract the best talent, because best talent also would like to work on the craziest challenges. They don't want to work on a regular problem. They would like to work on the craziest challenge. I mean, if you own it, then you can do that. And for some CEOs, for some of the organizations that I work with, I see that they have, by the way, they have great visions, like becoming like the thinking about future of finance, becoming bank of the future, becoming bank of future of the manufacturing, future of working. So there are lots of organizations thinking about the future. So what would the future look like? So can we do that? But the problem is this vision becomes one of the 10 other visions. So if you have several visions, it doesn't work. So single most important thing is you need to have one compelling vision, and then those other things, and I think it needs to be no more than three, those other things needs to be also aligned with this compelling vision. And if you have several visions, then I think what we can learn from Elon Musk, then build other companies. You don't have to do everything in the same company.
I agree. I agree. Everybody has to be in alignment. Everybody has to know what the compelling vision is and work focused on it.
And when I talk to the employees, senior leaders, directors in those companies, I get to hear that, okay, I mean, I tell them, okay, so this is the future of the organization you are talking about. Yeah, but I mean, and we have these other things as well. So they are confused. So when you have more vision, so you are confused. I
They're
think
so confused.
so the number one thing is like sticking to it. So the crazier, the better.
The
And that's
crazier. And because there's going to be so many ups and downs and a lot of downs, and everybody's confused. But then you still need to continue like overcoming those challenges and stick with it. I think
yes.
sometimes when people, when it starts to get difficult, then everybody maybe points somewhere else, looks somewhere else, and does something else because it's hard.
That's true. Yeah, it's hard. And then, I mean, most of the work life is about solving problems, putting the fires off, becoming a firefighter, working on the urgent stuff.
And what happens to these companies when they have a compelling vision? They're all going the same direction, and fires happen, problems happen. What happens when they have adopted a standard of communication? You know, of how do we solve problems? We have a clear standard on how to do that. We have a clear standard of when we have a conflict, how do we address conflict? What could be, you know, what is the impact if they have those clear standards?
Okay. Yeah, I think I mean, this is very much aligned with the culture you set in the company. And culture,
Communication culture.
yes, and also culture is about what you allow in the company. Like, I mean, so what is the standard? I mean, the standard is the keyword, I guess. What is the standard in your company? I think when you make it publicly clear, transparently clear in the company that you will not allow standards below a certain level, and this is the standard that you will like to work, and then if you leave the employees that, I mean, if you tell employees that, okay, you will only allow these standards, otherwise it will be hard to work together. I think that's number one thing. I think Elon Musk was talking about this as the opt-in organization. So he was saying that when he took over Twitter, I mean, he said all the employees need to opt in to work here. So he gave everybody a way to opt out, and then said that if you like to work with the standards, then you need to be willing to do that. Otherwise, I cannot force anybody to work on that. So. And this gives you the freedom of choice. And second, this gives the employees, okay, so this is what I I would like to do. This is what I choose to do. I set my standards at this level as well. And people who say challenge accepted. So that's a challenge. So I think that's number one. And second thing is in terms of communication. Okay, also, this is also related to your previous question. The keeping track. So what is the, so how do you measure the progress towards that vision that you would like? So I mean, if people see progress, and if people see that through the progress, through the vision, what is tolerated, what is not tolerated? Again, I will give example Elon Musk, because I think I mean, no matter what, I mean, besides other things, I think he's a great visionary, great risk taker in those contexts. And there is a documentary about the SpaceX in Netflix. I mean, if you watch it, you will see that, I mean, he risked everything for this compelling vision that to bring back the rockets back on Earth. He didn't know how to do it. Nobody believed in him. And all other space rocket scientists said that it was impossible. But people who believed in him wanted to work. And then the first three rockets launches failed. But what he did, he promoted the person who failed three rocket launches instead of firing him. So this is what we allow, because he publicly says that failure, as long as you learn from it, failure is appreciated. So that's the culture. I mean, in the communication, do you celebrate the culture? So how do you approach it? There's also another example in Google, in the early days of Google. Instead of a blame culture, if you have a challenge culture, so challenge is important, and also appreciation of learning and failure. In the early phases, Larry or Sergey, they say, okay, they are just not happy with something. In a regular company, you just say, okay, this thing doesn't work. So who did that? And you just complain and blame people and then ask them to fix it. In Google, not the way it works. They just put a sign on the kitchen in a Friday afternoon. Hey, this, and the sign says, this sucks. Okay, it shows that there's a picture of it. And then, you know what? In the kitchen, somebody finds about it. And by the way, that person, that engineer, is not a person in that team. Still, he says, okay, challenge accepted. He works on the problem throughout the weekend as an engineering challenge, as a maybe as a side hobby, not as part of his job. And then on Monday, he fixes the problem, even if it wasn't his responsibility. So, like, I mean, these kind of cultural things, I think, makes all those companies the number one companies in the world. Well, I mean, there is a reason why we call those companies as the Magnificent Seven.
Got it. No, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, they're willing to take all the risks, to go after that compelling vision that is not just incremental, it's not just one step, it's 10x, 20x, big visions, but they're willing to put it all in and stay focused on it. And then, like you said, when you're so focused on it, you're gonna attract, some people that are really interested in also solving the same problem will support, you'll find the right resources and move along toward that vision.
That's true.
And then for me, from my stand, it's like, and then we have those standards, like what is acceptable standard toward that vision? It could be like that mindset, the challenge mindset, the growth mindset, the communication, how do we solve problems together? How do, yeah, so all of that supports the execution of the vision.
That's true.
Oh my gosh, I learned so much today, and I think this is amazing conversation. It's always so fun to talk to you, Ozan. And so what about your book? Tell us, like, is it out
Okay,
already?
not yet, but hopefully soon. So hopefully this year, yeah, before this year. So I call it startup orientation. So this is actually the idea that I was telling you. Like, what can we learn from those great organizations, great startups? So any kind of organization can become like these startups. So that's the idea. And then how I feed this idea is actually through my academic research. I mean, there are different types of entrepreneurship. So before, when we call about entrepreneur, it was all about risk taking, all about like inventions. But now, I mean, with those startups, this is not what we see. So what we see, instead of taking more risk, the new startups operate more in uncertainty, especially through AI. Now we are living in a world which is more uncertain than ever. So dealing with uncertainty is the number one thing. Second thing is about have this experimentation mindset constantly. So everything we do, instead of calling it, okay, this is the way we do, we can call it an experiment and learn from it. And third one is, instead of the result of being an innovative company, we can focus on being creative and coming up with these new ideas, crazy ideas, the topic that we talk of, about this vision. This what crazy idea can you come? If we ask our employees about that, I'm definitely sure the company will be a more crazier place to work. And that's the good, that's the feature, that's not a bug. And the fourth thing is co-creation. How can we work and partner with others so we can build together?
Oh my
And
gosh.
fifth one, finally, is about the scalability part. This is actually, I mean, I frame it as opposed to economies of scale. So it's like in the past, it was more like becoming big, becoming huge organization, becoming powerful, and then our costs will be low. So it's all about optimization and cost effectiveness. But scalable organizations or exponential organizations are totally different. They choose to stay small, but, or at the same time, they aim to bring a lot of impact, a lot of value. So that's why, I mean, you hear that a lot. I mean, Sam Altman talks it, Dario talks it, Demis Hassabis talks it. They say that now we are living in a world where one person can create a billion-dollar startup. That's a scalable organization. That has never been possible before, but now this exciting time might produce these kind of people. And why not? One of us can do that.
You just created my compelling vision. That's gonna be
Yes.
me. Small but billion-dollar impact.
Yes. Yes.
That's
Scalable
why I bring
organization.
you to the that's why I bring you to the Speak and Flow podcast, because I always get so excited.
Wow,
Oh
great.
my gosh, that's great. I can't wait to get the book. So I'm excited. Let us know when it's out, and it's gonna be so great. It's gonna be always
Thank
so
you.
full of insight and research, and especially for me starting the business, to know that I like that idea, keeping it small but big impact, because we
Yes.
want to be flexible nowadays. When it's too big, it's difficult to move. And so just having that ability to make a big impact, even with just some quality people.
That's
I
true.
love that.
Yeah, you become more agile, yeah, more flexible.
I like it. I like it. I love that. Because then you can meet the needs of the market and the innovation that is happening.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, that's the most powerful asset of the startups and the founders against incumbent organizations, established organizations. So that's why they rely a lot on startups. So we are living in the world of startups right now. So everybody can be their own startup
Love
and
it.
reach to $1 billion. Because why
Love
not?
it, love it. Yes, why not? Thank you, Osan. I mean, it's really great. Thank you for your mission of helping people to have that entrepreneurial mindset and think big, in a really big vision way, and keeping us on track. I really appreciate your insights today.
Thank you, Melinda. Excitement is contagious, so I hope this spreads through the listeners of the podcast, and we'll see more of it.
The last episode, your episode was one of the top ranked. So I'm sure this one is too.
Thank you.
People like it. People like it. Well, thank you so much. And thank you, listeners. I trust that you got your takeaway for today. And remember, anytime you have a chance to communicate what matters so it inspires and moves people together. Take care. Bye-bye. Thank you, Ozan.
Thank you. Thank you, Melinda. Yeah, it was great.
Thanks for tuning in today. If this conversation sparked something for you, if you're thinking, we talk a lot in our organization and things still fall through the cracks, we're not getting the results that we want, I've got something for you that might help. It's called the Accountability Self-Assessment, and it takes less than 60 seconds. In one quick review, you'll get real insights as to why accountability and results are slipping on your team. And you'll walk away with a legacy accountability card. It's a simple one-pager framework to help you and your team move talk to traction. Because the legacy of you and your team is built more than just meetings. It's built on clarity, consistency, and follow-through. So grab it today. Go to speakinflow.com or click on the link in the show notes. It's free, fast, and built for busy leaders like you. See you next time. Until then, keep communicating with impact and momentum.